the legacy of Adrian Dix, you know, who is our provincial health minister, is Bill 36. And you know, Bill 36 is a terrifying bill. It's the Health Practitioners Act. It is a terrifying bill for a healthcare provider to work under. And people ask me why I am still in British Columbia. And I say, well, I probably am crazy because, you know, Bill 36, as you probably heard, if there's a doctor, you are guilty of misinformation, it's a $200,000 fine and 6 months in jail under Bill 36. Who on earth would want to be a doctor or a healthcare provider in BC where you're not allowed to give your opinion, where if you say something that the government doesn't agree with, you end up with a criminal record in jail? And you know, it's just absurd. It is absolutely absurd. And so, I mean, that's just a small part of it. You know, there's many other aspects to Bill 36, but it literally destroys freedom of speech and informed consent, because a doctor can no longer tell you what he actually thinks about a certain medical treatment in case the government doesn't agree with his opinion about it. So doctors can no longer even just speak freely with their patients. It's appalling. But this is, so it is critically important that people do something, because to just wring your hands and shrug your shoulders helps nothing. You need to act with your vote, and you need to be informing your friends. You need to be literally spreading the information about this craziness, because the healthcare system in Canada is collapsing. In BC, it's the worst, because even before they fired all, you know, the 3,000 healthcare workers who wouldn't have the shots, who they've never hired back, we already had 1 million people with no family doctor, even before that. And so they've made it so much worse. And of course, Bill 36 just magnifies that, because nobody in their right mind would work under that kind of draconian threat.
I'm so honored to introduce our special guest speaker this evening, Dr. Charles Hoff. Dr. Hoff is a respected physician with over 30 years experience practicing in Lytton, British Columbia. In 2021, one of his patients died, and another six had adverse reactions as a result of the Moderna COVID-19 injection. Dr. Hoff wrote an open letter to BC Health Officer Bonnie Henry expressing his concerns. As a result, the BC College of Physicians and Surgeons immediately implemented a gag order and reprimand in an attempt to intimidate and silence him. Dr. Hoff chose to uphold his Hippocratic oath and continued to advocate for patient safety and medical ethics. Consequently, the CPS issued a citation against Dr. Hoff, alleging that he engaged in unprofessional conduct. Now, this is obviously just a very short summary of what has happened in Dr. Hoff's life these past few years, and we're so grateful he's able to come onto the show tonight to discuss his battle against the BC College of Physicians and Surgeons and to expose corruption and medical tyranny. Will you all please help me welcome Dr. Charles Hoff? Dr. Hoff, thank you for joining us today, and welcome to the Empower Hour.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to be here.
So good to have you. Thanks, Heather, for those wonderful introductions. I just want to let our viewers know that I'm going to be in sometime in the very near future with the Empower Hour and the weekly news update, switching them. So we're going to start the Empower Hour at 4:30 that way, because I always have extra details on the weekly news updates and I don't like to have the guest wait. So I'm just giving you some notice on that. So just start marking it on your calendar that soon we'll be starting at 4:30 PST. So Dr. Hoff, I am so happy that you're here. It was crazy that your legal action, that you were going to finally get into the courts, and you adjourned it. And not you adjourned it, but there was a decision, a request to adjourn it, and the courts complied with that. So where would you like to begin? Where would you like to begin? Because I've got your open letter in front of me from April 5th of 2021, and I'm wondering if we should give our a little update as to your past so that people that don't actually know your story can get invested in who you are and what you're doing and the magnitude of it.
Yeah, Tanya, I think the update and the background is important for people to understand how we got to where we are, just so that they can see that the tactics haven't changed. And that's what I'd like to talk about, just the endless cover-ups and their use of intimidation and fear to control people. And they're just doing more of the same.
Right. And so how did your journey begin? When and how did this journey begin?
Well, it began back in March of 2021. So this was literally in the third month of the vaccine rollout. When the first thing, I mean, firstly, I was very skeptical of the safety of these vaccines because I knew that they had not been adequately safety tested and the public was being lied to. The public health told them that they had gone through all of the routine safety testing. It was nonsense. There was no animal testing. It was still in the phase two trials. There was no long-term safety. It was a brand new technology that had never been used in humans on any scale before, certainly not as a vaccine. And so we had absolutely no confidence in safety. And yet people were assured, including the medical establishment, just believed it, that it was all safe. And I looked at previous efforts to make RNA vaccines after the first SARS virus, and they were a disaster. The laboratory animals that they were tried on, that they were tested on, literally were more vulnerable to the virus having been vaccinated than if they had not been vaccinated. In other words, it worked as an anti-vaccine. So I was very skeptical that this was going to go well. And so I was watching for signs of harm because doctors are supposed to do no harm. And so I first got into trouble literally by just sending an email to a group of colleagues in my area say when the AstraZeneca shot was discontinued in Europe, And Trudeau had ordered a vast amount for Canada and was continuing to administer them, saying that they weren't safe in Europe, but they're fine for Canadians. I did not like that. And so I sent an email to a group of my colleagues who were actually giving these shots because I would have nothing to do with it. I knew they were not safe. And so I sent this email saying that there's a serious safety signal and we need to take note of it and we should. I suggested that we should pause and take stock of the safety issues. And that was when 12 countries in Europe had shut down AstraZeneca. So I was given a gag order and told I wasn't allowed to say anything negative about these shots where I worked as an emergency room doctor. And I was told that this was going to be sent as a complaint to the college and that if I had any questions, it needed to be directed to the medical health officer in charge of the rollout for our area and that I was not allowed to speak to my colleagues about my safety concerns. So I thought, well, this is a bit odd. But anyway, I complied with my gag order. But then I started to see serious adverse reactions in my own patients. And so I sent a letter off to that doctor that I'd been told to communicate with to ask her how I treat these, because I did not know what the diagnosis was. I'd never seen medical problems like this before, and I had no explanation. And so I said, you know, I told her what was happening. I said, please tell me, as these people's family doctor, how do I treat this? What is the disease process that has been initiated by these injections? Because I have no idea what to do. And I told her how many people have been vaccinated and how many vaccine injuries there were. And I worked out the statistics. And of course, I got no answer because she didn't know. They were claiming these were safe and effective. So why are we talking about vaccine injuries? So then when I got no answer, I thought, well, I obviously need to go to somebody who's a bit more knowledgeable. And so I sent a letter to Dr. Bonnie Henry. And so I made it an open letter because I was warned by some colleagues that she does not reply to letters. So there's no point in sending a letter to her because it goes in the shredder. So I sent it as an open letter, which attracted a lot of attention. And I basically set out, you know, what the rate of injury was, and I pointed out to them that up until that time in the pandemic, we had not had one single person in our community needing any medical care for COVID whatsoever. But then at that point, I mean, that was very early in the vaccine rollout. I had six seriously vaccine injured people and one dead from it and six injured. So it was clear to me that these shots were more dangerous than COVID. And I mentioned this in the letter because there was nobody who was harmed by COVID and all these people who were harmed by the shots. And so this riled the authorities even more because I was not abiding by my gag order. And so because doctors are not supposed to be harming patients, and especially vaccines. Vaccines are not a treatment for a disease. Vaccines are a treatment given to keep healthy people healthy. So there should be an absolute zero tolerance for it making healthy people sick, literally. And so that is why I refused to abide by the gag order, because it was against my conscience and it was against my oath to do no harm. And so I suppose the next thing was, my open letter generated a lot of interest. And I believe I was interviewed by you back then.
And a number of others.
Because people took a lot of interest that, you know, here was a doctor who was swimming against the tide and who was risking all to bring attention to this safety signal. And so the authorities were clearly looking for something to take me down with, because 1 month after my open letter to Dr. Bonnie Henry, the college issued a warning. And the BC College did it, and I think every other college across Canada did the same. They sent out a letter saying to doctors, if you spread misinformation about COVID or the COVID vaccines, you will be investigated and, if found guilty, disciplined. In other words, this was like a gag order for all doctors everywhere. Just toe the line, keep your head down, and get on with your work. And I believe it seems to me that my open letter, which raised a lot of eyebrows, triggered this warning. And so they created an illusion of consensus in the medical profession by threatening doctors. And, you know, many doctors, you know, have families to feed, they've got mortgages to pay, they've got financial liabilities, and so they can't afford to just risk the things that they were being threatened with. And of course, nobody wants to get into trouble, but I already stuck my neck out, and so I wasn't about to pull it back in. I wouldn't be a tortoise or a turtle. So anyway, it's not my nature. I am a person that lives by the law of God.
Yeah.
So I suppose, let me just think of when it was, maybe a month after my open letter, we had a vax-injured patient come into our emergency room, and I was on call, and so the nurse phoned me. I was actually at home. It was a Saturday evening, and the nurse phoned me to tell me about this person that had come in. It was very unwell after her COVID injection. And I said, I know that patient. She and all of her family had COVID about 5 weeks ago. And for all of them, it was nothing serious. You know, they felt out of sorts for a while and then they were fine. They didn't need any treatment. It was not as bad as the flu, really not as bad as the flu. And now she was much more sick from the COVID shot than she was from COVID. And so this patient thought that something was seriously wrong. She'd been told that COVID was this killer disease that was going to decimate the population and overwhelm the healthcare system, but it wasn't as bad as the flu. And now she had this shot to protect her against the killer disease, and it made her more sick than the disease. So anyway, I said to the nurse, please just tell this patient she has natural immunity. The fact that her COVID illness was so mild shows that she had natural immunity. So I said to the nurse, and I explained to the nurse, there was some really good research from Duke University in Singapore that showed that natural immunity lasts at least 18 years. And that was research done on the first SARS virus, which they tested in 2020. So I said, on the basis of all of that, please just tell the patient she doesn't need her second shot. And on the basis of me telling the nurse that, I was fired from the ER for saying that somebody who had proven natural immunity, and the proof was the fact that when she got COVID, that was no big deal. That was the proof. But anyway, I was fired. That was it. Wiped out 50% of my income. I had to then go to my wife and my four children and say, look, we're just want to let you know, I'm not just under investigation with the college, but we have now lost 50% of our income. And so please just be a bit more frugal. The hard times are coming. And so, yeah, so that's what they did to me for that. And then, yeah, well, the story goes on, but maybe we'll give it a break.
Well, yeah, no, just this was the introduction part of it that I was looking for, and everything and anything that's on your mind, we want to unpack and unfold all of this. But just to clarify as well, you never administered an injection to any of your patients. These were patients that went out of their own accord and decided to go and get this mRNA gene therapy, thinking that it was a vaccine. And so then with treating those patients, I'm just going to read something that you had. This is from the open letter that you'd sent to Bonnie Henry. So this was based on the first dose of the Moderna vaccine had now been administered to some of your patients. And I'm going to say that's you were in Lytton, BC. You're a doctor in Lytton, BC. And we'll talk later about as well what happened to your beautiful little town and all of your records, because that's an important detail. It says, this is you speaking. I've been quite alarmed at the high rate of serious side effects from this novel treatment. From this relatively small number of people vaccinated so far, we have had numerous allergic reactions with two cases of anaphylaxis, one presumed vaccine-induced sudden death. This person died very suddenly and unexpectedly, and then three people with ongoing and disabling neurological deficits. And I've had Dr. McCullough previously on the show, and I didn't know him years ago when I was creating the notices of liability, but I had quoted him when he said that normally, if there's a new drug on the market and there's 50 deaths, you'll see it pulled from the market. You'll see it all over the television. Lawyers are lining up to get involved, right? And start making some money for these people who have lost a loved one. And despite all of the number of deaths, and that there's an FOI to Bonnie Henry from early on January, I think it was, to May of 2021, where her own staff were advising her of injuries. So here you are now. There's proof out there. She can never, ever, when she gets into court, Action for Canada is taken. We're still, going for it as well as you, and going to hold this lady to account for her tyrannical decisions that she has made. It's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out, knowing that we have FOIs revealing the criminal activity that's been going on. We have this amazing letter that you've written with your experience as a doctor, your testimony of being fired for telling the truth, and just what has transpired in your life because of it. And so let's go to that next step. What I want to ask, I'm curious to know, throughout 2020, as maybe early on, let's go back to January, February, when we were starting to hear about this virus and, the terror that was going to hit Canada. When did you first become aware of it? And what was your initial feelings?
Are you saying first aware of that this whole thing was being overhyped?
Well, when did you first become aware that in Canada there was a so-called problem with COVID-19, and what was your initial response in 2020 when you first heard about COVID-19 and then just moving from there for the year in 2020?
Yeah, so when this pandemic, I was in South Africa visiting family when this whole pandemic took off. And so I came back. I was watching the ordinary media, but I did look at alternative media as well, and I saw quite a disconnect. And an important bit of evidence very early on was that Japanese cruise ship called the Diamond Princess that you might remember, and it was incredibly important and seems to be mostly forgotten now. But it was to me that was just to very quickly to tell your listeners about it, because we should have woken up earlier if we had been observant. But this was a cruise ship with 3,700 passengers on board, of which 1,000 were crew, and 2,700 were older folk. You know, often people that go on cruise ships are usually retired people and that sort of thing. Anyway. Somebody on this ship had COVID. This was in January of 2020, right at the beginning, before this was even declared a pandemic. So this person got sick and was taken off the boat and was found to have COVID. And so the captain was then a bit concerned and wasn't quite sure what to do, but they didn't let any other passengers off the ship. They just carried on for a couple of days doing what people do on cruise ships. And then the more people started getting sick, and the captain decided, well, I guess we better tell people to just stay in their cabins. So these 2,700 passengers were all stayed in their cabins, and the 1,000 crew members served them 3 meals a day, taking them to their cabins, cleaning their rooms with no PPE at all. This was like a floating experiment, because you had this closed system of 1,000 working age young people who were the crew and 2,700 older people who were the passengers. So the long and the short of it was none of the crew died. They used no PPE. They spent the entire time with these sick people, serving them every day with no PPE, and not one single one died. So we could see from that this wasn't a dangerous thing for young people. Some of them never got sick at all, which told us that this actually wasn't a new virus. This because some people had natural immunity. And amongst the passengers, the median age, so 7 died in total, of which the median age was 81. So it told us that this was something that was dangerous to the frail elderly. It wasn't dangerous to everybody. And that there were literally some cases where in one cabin, you'd have one in the couple who would literally die of COVID, and the other would get nothing, absolutely no symptoms. So it was clear that there were people with natural immunity. So this was really early on. So this alerted me to the fact that, firstly, this isn't a new virus because there are people with natural immunity. Secondly, it's not equally dangerous to everybody. And the fact that the crew had no PPE and none of them died showed that, you know, what Sweden did, where they just carried on as usual, was actually a very reasonable way of doing it. So I was aware very early on that this was completely being exaggerated. And during the whole first year of the pandemic, you know, I was working in an emergency room doctor. And we were being hailed as these frontline heroes saving all these lives, and we were doing nothing. The emergency rooms were quieter than ever. We were literally twiddling our thumbs, feeling like frauds, because these people would come and hail us, and the First Nations people were beating their drums and singing and honoring us for these incredible, our bravery, and we've done nothing. There was nobody sick. I felt like a fraud.
Well, you know, it's quite something, right? Because early on, I've mentioned, my viewers may know, or some new ones may not, but early on, March, I knew instantly that this was not a serious illness, because I'd been at this 5 at that time, five years at that time, I thought this is the next step towards bringing communists into this country. And it had all the socialist agenda marked all over it and how to control the people and all the rest of it. But I wrote that report called Government Corruption, Including with a Foreign Syndicate. And it detailed, you know, Trudeau's alignments with the globalists and Bonnie Henry and her alignments with Bill Gates and on and on. And I went to the RCMP, top assistant commissioner at the time, and showed him this report and talked to him about it. And he admitted to me his father had passed away. He was admitted. He obviously had, I'm not sure what the ailment was. I do not believe in any way it was COVID related. And because he never mentioned that, but he spent the first few months visiting his father in the hospital, and he'd admitted the hospitals were empty. And so I'm sitting there and saying, well, what are you going to do about this then? Commence an investigation. I can't tell you, you would know how frustrating this has been to be awake and aware from the very, very beginning and to have nobody in a position of authority doing anything about it. In fact, they were doing the contrary to it and facilitating this and then taking those extra steps to intubate people and to give them, what was the drug that was being administered to them?
Remdesivir.
So did you experience any of that treatment being done in the hospitals while you were still in emergency?
So in our emergency, we had to have the entire emergency room divided into two halves, a COVID section and a non-COVID section. And so they came and set up a negative pressure room the expense was absurd. So a negative pressure room is a room where it's basically a giant vacuum cleaner that sucks the air out of that room and puts it outside, assuming that the air in there is going to be toxic and full of these deadly viruses. And so we had to practice suiting up and suiting down in these hazmat suits. And that's what we were going to be, you know, told that this is, you know, and with all these visors and, you know, all this hazmat gear to try and intubate somebody to put them on a ventilator is really difficult because you can hardly see. And so I was, you know, getting ready to be intubating these people and putting them on ventilators when the ambulance was going to be bringing them in. And that, you know, eventually our whole health facility burned. But by the time it burned, which was a year and a half into the pandemic, we still had not treated one single person for COVID, nothing. I mean, let alone putting someone on a ventilator, nobody needed any treatment. We were quieter. All of the hospitals were quieter. But, in that first early part of the pandemic, before there were vaccines, than we had been for decades.
Wow.
And yet the media were saying the exact opposite, that the staff were exhausted and at the verge of breaking, and the healthcare system was under enormous strain, and it was all lies. It was all lies. Yes.
In the report that I had mentioned, I drove three hospitals, Langley out to White Rock and then into Surrey Memorial. And this was in April. I got out of my car. I walked straight into emergency, which was completely empty. I did a scan of the emergency room, got back in my car, went to Peace Arch Hospital in White Rock, did the exact same thing. They got the big white tents outside. Drove up to Surrey Memorial Hospital, did the exact same thing. And I saw the security guards. It's a glass room that you can see from outside with their masks off, all chatting, and the big white tent outside. But Global News earlier in the day or the day before had shown this huge lineup outside the hospitals. I mean, it was so staged and such a fraud that every single person eventually who was involved in this deception and these crimes against humanity need to be held to account. Can I just share my screen for a second? Because when I always create a page for the guest, and our artist Hans had come up with this: complicit corruption versus ethical opposition. And so when Dr. Hoff is talking about the fact that the hospitals were empty, what were we seeing on social media to prove it? But, you know, TikTok dances. you know, all keeping the spirits up, right? Because, you know, of all the horror they were seeing in the hospitals. Anyway, so as you were talking, I thought, yeah, I've got to show this. And then one other article I had provided, it comes from a lawyer down in the United States who, it's called mRNA Shedding, Transmissibility in Cancer. And it's heartbreaking when I read this because I've been talking a lot about transmission and especially, you know, parents who have taken it to children or pregnant women. But he describes it as, I'm going to try and keep it this as brief as possible. He says, where is it? Okay, so yeah, where he says, in my opinion, what I've discovered is nothing less than premeditated murder in the rollout of this. And the fact that when they found out that it, thank you, Trenzio, when they found out that it was causing these deaths and harms, they didn't remove it from the market immediately. Thank you, Trenzio. Okay, so let's, okay, so now I know where you were in 2020. And so you already had known early on as well. And then we go into 2021 and they're administering these jabs. I myself as well was appealing to the police and sending them reports. We had Sean Muldoon in BC as well, that father who took, I think it was the AstraZeneca. Remember that? And he had like 8 feet of his intestines removed. And still Bonnie Henry wouldn't put a stop to it. And so just anything else from 2021 that's relevant that you'd like to share before we move on?
Yes. So I started trying to report the vaccine injuries that I was seeing in my own patients. And so, in fact, Dr. Bonnie Henry didn't reply to my open letter, but she referred me to a vaccine safety specialist who I had a telephone meeting with. And so I asked her all the same questions as I asked Dr. Bonnie Henry, you know, what is the disease process that these shots are creating and how do I treat it? And is it ethical to continue to administer a vaccine with a serious safety signal like this? And the response was, these are not vaccine injuries. These are all coincidences. The vaccine doesn't do that. Even though they had no explanation for what was happening in my patients and made no effort to investigate it in any way, they weren't interested in investigating it. They simply just shrugged it off and said, nope, just, and so she said, well, just report them as vaccine injuries. So I said, well, I'd already done that. So initially after sending in the first six reports, the local, medical health officer, Dr. Carol Fenton, who these letters went to, was doing media presentations. What is it called? I can't remember what the terminology is, where you talk to the media and you give them an update, that there was absolutely no evidence of any vaccine injuries in Lytton and that everything that I was saying was untrue and unsubstantiated. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll give her the benefit of maybe she is being honest. Maybe she never got any of the reports. So I gave her the benefit of the doubt. And I redid all of them and sent them by registered mail so that somebody had to sign for them. I mean, and doing these reports is very laborious. Each one is 9 pages long. It literally takes you at least 25 minutes per patient. So I submitted the first six again by registered mail. And all of the responses I get, ultimately, I submitted 14. And in every single case, the response was, these are not vaccine injuries. We have absolutely no idea what's caused these new symptoms, but it can't be the vaccine. And this patient needs the next shot. So I realized that it was impossible to report vaccine injuries because they were literally being censored higher up. And that the whole vaccine injury reporting system was a joke. Because it was completely dishonest. It was a systematic cover-up of the evidence of harm.
Well, I believe it 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And you know, before this pandemic, doctors could report vaccine injuries, and so could nurses, so could anybody. But they changed it for this pandemic so that they literally all had to be, they all had to be verified by some vaccine injury denier who would make sure that they didn't get into the statistics. And well, so it was a systematic cover-up.
Yeah, and I had whistleblower nurses reaching out to me. One gave me something like 8 death certificates. And I remember one being an 84-year-old gentleman with stage 4 cancer, and they marked it a COVID death. And then another woman who had been given the vax and all of a sudden started having intestinal bleeding and, you know, became very, very ill. I mean, I just went through one after the other, and that was like, I think, got to remember, I think it was in late 2021. And then I had another nurse, she was administrator, who contacted me, and she was on the team that would go into the elderly care homes and provide the COVID mRNA gene therapy to the elderly. And she said she would be in tears because the elderly would come into a common room to get their vax, and they greeted each other like they hadn't seen each other in months, which they hadn't. And so she knew that, and she's looking at what's transpiring there. Then they were holding down some elderly people and forcing the jab into their arm. She had one of the hospitals, they were doing the jab to the elderly as well, and people in the community, and several people had coded. They were rushed off. She never knew what happened to them. It's sometimes been a helpless feeling journey to know this, and still moving forward and trying to do our best to move towards justice. And I do believe we're going to get there, because throughout history, this kind of evil has never, never been able to prevail. And God is going to intervene. But boy, what a journey to get here. Oh, okay. So moving into 2022, or please describe now that our viewers understand your journey. You're an ethical doctor. You were committed to your oath. You were never going to participate in causing any harm to a patient to keep your job. And I think everybody watching this should give all the support in the world to you, Dr. Hoff, and every doctor in this country and around the world that stood up for that reason. Many people complied because they didn't want to lose their income. So I just want to make that abundantly clear to people. We are indebted to you for the stand that you've taken. And so from there, how did you get in this mess about a legal action? What happened?
The college sent out this warning letter across Canada to doctors not to spread misinformation. And of course, they considered my announcement of the vaccine injuries that were happening in my patients as misinformation. And the fact that I spoke about neurological harm and the number vaccinated and that the vaccine was more dangerous than COVID was misinformation. And then I had, maybe I should just add this in, I had tried to figure out, because the vaccine safety specialists were vaccine injury deniers. They were of no help to tell me how to treat these poor people. And so I set out to try and discover for myself what the diagnosis was. What was the mechanism of injury? How was this vaccine hurting them so that as a doctor, I would know how to treat them? And so when Dr. Byron Bridle disclosed that he got the Pfizer biodistribution study that had been done on mice with the lipid nanoparticles, which showed that the vaccine does not stay in your arm. It goes intravenous very rapidly and distributed around your body. So once we discovered that, we knew that Pfizer had lied to Health Canada about this not being an intravenous vaccine. It was an intravenous vaccine. It went to every part of your body. And so once I realized that those spike proteins are going to be made in the cells around your blood vessels, because that's where things that are absorbed from your bloodstream end up, in the cells around your blood vessels. And so the spike proteins are going to be in those cells. So the cells that line your blood vessels are not going to be smooth anymore. They're going to be full of spikes, which means that clots are inevitable, because blood platelets that hit a rough spot form a clot. That's what blood platelets do. That's their design by God to stop you bleeding when you cut yourself. They block the vessel. So I thought, well, microclotting has to be the mechanism of injury for these vaccine injuries, at least maybe some of them. So I started doing this blood test. Well, I started asking my patients if I could monitor their COVID injection. People that were going off to have this injection to keep them safe, I said, would you like me to monitor? I'm concerned that this might be causing microclotting. Would you be interested in doing this blood test before your shot to see what your baseline is, and 1 week afterwards to see if there's a change, to see if maybe you get microclotting from this? So I started recruiting people for this. And when I got the first 8 people's results back, and 5 out of the 8 had evidence that they had clotted, which actually works out at 62%, I was horrified. I was, you know, and I'd planned to make this a big study. I was going to get other doctors involved. I really wanted to make this scientifically valid so it could be published. And I couldn't keep silent. I was so upset at what they were doing to people, because these weren't vax-injured people. These were people that thought their shot was fine, and they had evidence that they were clotting. Somewhere in their body, they were getting blood clots. And I knew those blood clots would be microscopic and scattered all over their body so that you wouldn't see them on a scan because they're too small and they're scattered. So I spoke about this in an interview with Laura Lynn on her TV program. And literally just over a week after that, our entire town burned to the ground. And so the timing of it was very suspicious. It wasn't a forest fire. It was not a wildfire. This was a firestorm in my town, which wiped out my medical practice, my medical records, the lab where the blood tests were being done, the ER that I'd been fired from. It annihilated everything. And it was a terrifying day, actually. And so that was the end of my medical practice. And so, I mean, I think it may have just been a coincidence, but a lot of people don't think it was, just because the timing was very suspicious, because my announcement of the microclotting went right across the world. I was getting, you know, I've never put anything on social media. I was getting messages from LinkedIn telling me that there were several hundred people every week trying to find me on LinkedIn, you know, doctors from around the world. And please, would I have a LinkedIn page, you know, and that sort of, but I'm not a social media person. I'm a very quiet, private sort of person. So I didn't want that. But anyway, the timing was odd. And so that's made my life more difficult, that got wiped out. And so fortunately, I still have a medical license and I can still work from home, but the college is still after me because I have been a spreader of misinformation. When I heard they were going after the children, I set off with Dr. Stephen Malthouse and Kerry Simpson and some other freedom warriors to do a speaking tour around BC. And we went into Alberta and Saskatchewan to literally do meetings place to place to try and, it was really aimed at trying to protect the children. They had already vaccinated a lot of the adults, but it was the children that really, that motivated this, because there was no reason to be vaccinating children against this. COVID was almost no risk to children whatsoever. And we knew even at that point about the myocarditis risk in children, that it was horrendous. You know, in teenage males, it's literally about 1 in 30. And in most of them, it's asymptomatic myocarditis, which means that a huge number of these kids are getting asymptomatic heart damage, just as my patients were getting microclotting that they didn't even know about, but yet it was permanent damage. It wasn't rare, and it was permanent, and it would accumulate with every shot. And so the fact that I did all these speaking tours, and I think I probably went through about 50 cities, really riled the college, because this was very much going against their desire to silence doctors. And so they've issued the citation against me, and they've accused me of, you know, of misinformation, talking about microclotting and neurological injuries and people dying from the vaccine. And of course, I spoke about ivermectin because people needed an alternative to this vaccine. And of course, they didn't want people to have an alternative, but ivermectin was uniquely situated for that. So doctors had been banned from prescribing ivermectin in BC and Alberta. So I told people, well, there's no replacement for ivermectin. And so really, if you really want to protect yourself, you're going to have to use the non-prescription ivermectin, which is made for for livestock, but it's exactly the same thing. It's just a solution, not a pill. The solution is pure ivermectin and water. That's all it is. It's actually more pure than a pill because it's got no fillers. But they really didn't like this, that I was telling people to use non-prescription products. And so I have a trial that was supposed to have started 2 days ago on the 4th of March. But shortly before the trial, and so I've got 8 expert witnesses lined up, brilliant people like Peter McCulloch and Pierre Corey, you know, who's going to be speaking about ivermectin. And so I've got 8 expert witnesses with brilliant expert testimonies to support what I've said and what I've done. And so the college clearly, as I mentioned, this has been a systematic cover-up all along. The censorship of the vaccine injuries, just the lies from the media trying to terrify everybody to really prepare them for the vaccines. But so what the college did is it sprang this thing on me and my lawyer literally shortly before the trial by applying for something called judicial notice. So what judicial notice is, judicial notice was almost unheard of before this pandemic. It's a process where a court, if they take judicial notice of certain facts, they basically say that those facts are irrefutable and indisputable, and therefore no evidence will be presented to support those facts, and no evidence can be presented to contradict those facts. So what the college is asking the disciplinary panel to do is to take judicial notice of the facts stated by the college, which are, things like ivermectin is not safe or effective for treatment of COVID. The vaccines are safe and effective, all those sort of things. So that they are asking this panel to take judicial notice of this whole series of these facts, which means that I will be unable to give any defense, and none of my expert witnesses will be allowed to testify in my defense. It basically is a continuation of this cover-up of the evidence of harm. They are literally perverting justice in order to silence me and in order to stop this evidence being released. Because, there were many, many people who had applied for a video link to watch the trial, and we're going to watch this evidence being presented, and they are desperate to not let this evidence get out.
Right. Well, so we faced this. We faced the same thing with our case and obstacles, and the very fact that they don't want to see anybody in court with any expert witnesses. And just so our viewers understand, what Dr. Hoff is talking about is that, I'm not going to argue whether the sky is blue scientifically, but we look at the sky on a day where it appears blue and we say the sky is blue. That, would be this fact. And so what the College of Physicians are doing is they're making a statement and saying this cannot be argued. And So it cannot be argued that ivermectin has been award-winning, a safe drug that the UN themselves have tested. I think it's a 1963 trial that they had put it through, and it said that was hydroxychloroquine is the safest drug, and said, but not in high doses. So just as a little bit of fun here, I want to go back, because it was the Lancet Journal, because hydroxychloroquine was the drug that was first promoted to assist with treating COVID early in 2020. And so then the Lancet Journal comes out with this fraudulent organization that had claimed that hydroxychloroquine was causing heart attacks and to pull it from the market and all the rest of it. Well, then it's sort of, mud in the face of those who are behind this scam and the UN and the Lancet Journal, because it was proven that the organization saying that had just popped up all of a sudden out of the blue to give these reports. So then the UN, the WHO says, okay, so we're going to now do testing with hydroxychloroquine, and they wanted member nations being part of the trials. And so they gave a dose that was recommended that was like 4 times the recommended dose. Well, what did their 1963 report say? But it was safe, but not in high doses. I mean, it's so criminal beyond belief what these dirty dogs have been up to.
These criminals employ scientists to create fake evidence. And in fact, what they did with hydroxychloroquine to show that it wasn't good for COVID is hydroxychloroquine has to be used quite early on in a COVID infection. Otherwise, it's not effective. You've got to use it during the viral phase when the virus is still replicating. If you use it for somebody who's into the clotting phase of the disease, it's too late. So what they did, they tested it on people who it was already too late. It wasn't going to work. They massively overdosed them intentionally. They gave them a ridiculous dose at a time in their illness when it couldn't help them, and then used that as proof that it was neither safe nor effective. So this was clear. I mean, and then published this in The Lancet. And so The Lancet published it. And then when this was pointed out to them that this was absurd, then they quietly retracted it. But meanwhile, doctors and pharmacists and nurses all over the world had seen, oh, hydroxychloroquine is not safe for COVID. There's a study in The Lancet. The tobacco industry did this with tobacco for years and years and years. And of course, they've done it with ivermectin, designing fake studies to cover up the evidence. It's really sad how they've perverted science and they've perverted justice in this pandemic. Mm-hmm. It's just appalling. It's very sad.
So it is. And so when you were going to have your court date, I think it was supposed to start the beginning of this week, but I understand they dumped 10,000 pages on you of information that they were already on for months and months. And I know Lee is your lawyer, and he's like, yeah, I got to ask for an adjournment because how am I going to get through this in 2 weeks? Which is, of course, one of the stunts that they pull.
Yes, they have been working on this for months, and to dump it at the last minute on Lee, knowing that I only have one lawyer, because I have to pay for this myself. You know, the college has all your tax dollars at work for their team of lawyers. I don't think they've even got a budget because they just, you know, they. So this is a David versus Goliath situation, and they knew that by preparing all this stuff and then dumping it on Lee at the last minute was an absurd volume of, it was 43 case references. And so in other words, these are other trials where judicial notice has been used. And in most cases, it's been overturned because it was found to be invalid. But you have to read through the fine print and see what the other judgments were. And it takes days and days, knowing that Lee couldn't possibly deal with this before the trial. So they sprang this on. This was a dirty trick to spring this on Lee right at the last minute. And so Lee then asked for an emergency pre-hearing conference where he just set this out. And he said, you know, this is grossly unjust. And not only is this an attempt to pervert justice by preventing Dr. Hough from defending himself, And this is unjust because it is covering up the evidence of harm. But it's just not fair. You know, there's normally a date ahead of time where that is the deadline for submitting these documents. But because this is being done by the college, it's not actually in the court system. So there's actually far less rules and regulations. And although we did have an agreed date for submission of expert testimonies and saying who the witnesses were, this didn't really quite fall under that because it wasn't an expert testimony and it wasn't a naming witnesses. This was slightly different. And so they used that loophole to delay it until the last minute. So anyway, fortunately, the disciplinary panel granted the adjournment. And so Lee is now busy working on his response to try and persuade the disciplinary panel to not grant judicial notice. But obviously, this increases the legal costs because it drags things out even longer.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what they count on as well. I mean, they treat our money like it's monopoly money and nobody's accountable. And that's why we know that these individuals should be arrested. There's lots against them. We just don't have a police force that's willing to do it or are neglecting their duties. So I want to go to my webpage for a moment, and I'm just going to share in the action that I had created for Dr. Hoff. When you go to our webpage, we're going to add it into the chat right now. And so anybody that would be willing to support Dr. Hoff, you come down the page right here to his legal action. If you click on that button, you'll see a GoFundMe that our good friend Ted Koontz has created for Dr. Hoff. You see their goal here and where they're at. And I look at it that, you know, we send this out to a really large email list. And if everybody gave $10 to each of our legal actions, it would be amazing what we could accomplish. For those that can give $20 or $100, please support Dr. Hoff today. You can hear that he has sacrificed so much for Canadians. And Lee Turner is an excellent individual. This is Dr. Hoff's lawyer. He's a man of integrity. And so we got to support one another. And, you know, that's the way that you can do it. Please don't send Action for Canada checks for Dr. Hoff. We got a couple this week for you. We've sent one off in the mail. And then the other one was filled out to us and not you for you. So that we had to send it back to the lady. But if you could go instead to the GiveSendGo account, that would be awesome. And always, you know, we support GiveSendGo as well, because they don't censor good freedom loving people like ourselves, like GoFundMe would. anyway, so good. All right, if we can take that screen down now, we've posted it as well in the chat. And so, Dr. Hoff, that's just amazing. We thank you for that. I thought there was another question I was going to ask you. I don't know if you're involved in this as well, but as a physician, do you have a union that's over you as well, or is it the College of Physicians directly? End all and be all.
Well, the college is the licensing authority, so they're the ones that can withdraw my medical license, which basically then I'm no longer able to earn a living. And of course, they have authority to fine me as a punishment if they don't like what I've been doing, and to discipline me. You know, sometimes they'll just suspend doctors for a certain amount of time. These are the sort of things that they do to punish doctors. So, you know, Dr. Mark Trozzi in Ontario, he went through a disciplinary hearing and they decided he was a spreader of misinformation. And so they revoked his medical license and fined him. Well, they awarded him all of their legal fees. So he basically got a fine for $95,000. So they remove your ability to earn money, give you a crippling fine, and then you can't earn any money to appeal this because they've removed your ability to earn money. So it's very cruel and it's very tyrannical. But I am just praying that maybe that disciplinary panel will be honorable people, that they will see what the college is doing. The trouble is it's a bit like Trudeau appointing somebody to investigate, you know, his use of the Emergencies Act, where you know, you know right off the bat, it's not unbiased to start with. And it's the same with this. These are all people who are being employed by the college to discipline me. So it's not exactly as though they're unbiased.
No. And the other thing is about the College of Physicians and Surgeons as well, is that across Canada, they have been reportedly captured by the World Health Organization. They are no longer institutions that are any longer Canadianized. They're globalized. And so there's an agenda here, and they're following lockstep, no matter what kind of sinking ship this looks like. because justice is coming. I really believe one way or the other, we're going to replace individuals in government who are going to start making better decisions, and they're going to undo this. You know, if we vote, we've got an election coming up in BC this fall. There is the BC Liberals, Kevin Falcon, who was the one in the video I was going to show that was like demanding in the legislature that all the unpaid nurses and medical professionals get back to work. And Adrian Dix, Minister of Health. And so he gets up there and, you know, calls Falcon out saying, you were the one that supported this under the Liberal Party prior to the NDP getting in. And so, you know, they have that bantering going on while several thousand healthcare professionals are out of work, been fired, struggling, taking whatever job they can to make ends meet. And so in BC, we have the Green Party, we have the NDP, the BC Liberals, but now we have the BC Conservative Party, the new BC Conservative Party, and John Rustad is the lead of that party, and all of his policies are right on. And I know many, many good people that are running for office as MLAs, as candidates in this upcoming election. And so I always encourage people, like I said, we are the majority, but are you doing your civic duty and getting out to vote? And will you take the time to get behind the elected officials that align with our values, with freedom, and get these people elected into office? Because that's the only way, one of the only ways we're going to undo this. And I hope there's going to be disciplinary action as well for judges who have also violated their oath to the bench, because they're a big reason why we're in this situation as well. And because what the government is doing by passing these unlawful legislation to say that you can't discuss ivermectin, we've said it's no good, when we've got evidence to say, yes, it is good. I mean, a judge has to overturn that and say, no, I'm going by the charter and the constitution, and that is not accurate. And we're almost going to wrap up the show here. I was looking that in case anybody had asked any questions in the Q&A, but it looks like it's kind of hard for me to do this at times. It looks like it's just comments or statements. I know there's a lot of love for you in the chat, Dr. Hoff. People are just so appreciative for you and all that you're doing. And so as we wrap up here, is there any final comments or anything maybe that you didn't have an opportunity to talk about that you would like to let our viewers know?
No, I don't think so. I think the last thing that I just think needs to be mentioned, it's the legacy of Adrian Dix, you know, who is our provincial health minister, is Bill 36. And you know, Bill 36 is a terrifying bill. It's the Health Practitioners Act. It is a terrifying bill for a healthcare provider to work under. And people ask me why I am still in British Columbia. And I say, well, I probably am crazy because, you know, Bill 36, as you probably heard, if as a doctor you are guilty of misinformation, it's a $200,000 fine and 6 months in jail under Bill 36. Who on earth would want to be a doctor or a healthcare provider in BC where you're not allowed to give your opinion? Where if you say something that the government doesn't agree with, you end up with a criminal record in jail, and you know it's just absurd. It is absolutely absurd. And so, I mean, that's just a small part of it. You know, there's many other aspects to Bill 36, but it literally destroys freedom of speech and informed consent, because a doctor can no longer tell you what he actually thinks about a certain medical treatment in case the government doesn't agree with his opinion about it. So doctors can no longer even just speak freely with their patients. It's appalling. But this is, so it is critically important that people do something, because to just wring your hands and shrug your shoulders helps nothing. You need to act with your vote, and you need to be informing your friends. You need to be literally spreading the information about this craziness because the healthcare system in Canada is collapsing. In BC, it's the worst because even before they fired all, you know, the 3,000 healthcare workers who wouldn't have the shots, who they've never hired back, we already had 1 million people with no family doctor, even before that. Mm-hmm. And so they've made it so much worse. And of course, Bill 36 just magnifies that because nobody in their right mind would work under that kind of draconian threat.
Right. There's many, many doctors in British Columbia who are awake, but just too terrified to take the kind of courageous steps like you have and who are talking about quitting. And I've spoken to some of those doctors just because they're so overwhelmed. They don't even want to go in the hospitals because they know what's been going on now. And as for Bill 36, to give people encouragement, Action for Canada is going to be filing our new notice of civil claim. And Bill 36 happened after August 21 when we had filed our original claim. And we will be including Bill 36 as a constitutional challenge. So I know there's other types of actions being done, but not on a constitutional level. So we're all going to be chipping away at this from different angles. And it's just been so concerning as this has unfolded and to see the amount of doctors we're losing. And then, of course, another factor, you talk about 1 million citizens without a doctor here in British Columbia. And now we're being flooded as well with migrants and the mass immigration. And so Action for Canada is also fighting on the front line very, very assertively and trying to make sure that there be a moratorium on immigration so that we can relieve what is going on. I mean, the medical tyranny in Canada where patients can't get the care they need is beyond belief. My mom, I just took her to a specialist appointment yesterday. She's got macular degeneration, and so she has to get these shots in her eyes. They had a form that was advising her that this would no longer be available. Apparently, it has been a project they've been doing since 2009, and now the BC government no longer has money to fund this. And so they're advising them that as of the end of March, she'll have to pay for it herself. And so I'm like, how about you stop funding all the social programs? How about you stop funding the radical mutilation of children with our tax dollars, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars being sent on mutilating people's bodies? How about you stop all of the funding all the NGO groups and put it into medical care? Don't tell me you're so sorry. They were going on in the letter about, you know, with inflation and all of the concerns that, you know, the BC government just can't cover these costs. And I'm like, no, it's that they won't and that they're misplacing the funds and they don't have their priorities in order. And so, Dr. Hoff, again, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. I'm hoping everybody that views this, I'm going to ask you to share this video when we post it on the Empower Hour tomorrow page, that you guys share this with at least 5 people. All right, let's get as many views so more people can learn of Dr. Hoff's incredible story and give him the support that he needs. And so, yeah, so Dr. Hoff, thank you. And you know what, give our viewers one final word there.
Well, I think the final word is that this is actually a spiritual war. This is a war against humanity. It's a war against the family. It's a war against our children. It's a war against the elderly through the euthanasia. It's a war against all of us. But a war against people is a war against God, because we are God's image bearers. And so the battle actually belongs to the Lord. This is actually, they are trying to fight God and they will lose. They're going to discover that you can't fight God and win. So be strong, be determined, never give up, and never cower in fear. You know, Tanya, I admire you so much for your courage. You are such a beacon of light. Thank you so much for what you are doing, because this is the time for courage. And fear is the tool of the enemy. That is how they have managed to ruin this nation, is by fear and intimidation, fear, intimidation, and misinformation. It's that triad that they use. And we must not give in to the fear, because once you give in to the fear, you don't think clearly and you don't do what you need to do. So don't be afraid. The battle belongs to the Lord, and he will win. So we will never give up.
That's an amazing word. I've got a couple of Bible scriptures I give at the end, and they're going to be right in line with what it is that you're saying. So I love it. Our battle, it says in Ephesians, is not against flesh and blood. It's not against people. It's, you know, about evil entities in high places. And what happens is we've got these empty vessels, these people walking around who haven't received Jesus. And so that's a perfect place for the enemy to reside. And so we just really encourage people, if you're struggling, if you're having a bit of a nudge that, you know, from the Lord, and you need hope, just hang in there. Let's listen to the Bible verses and pray, you know, pray, ask God to make himself real in your life so that you can have the peace that passes all understanding that Dr. Hoff and I have and the rest of our team. So thank you so much, Dr. Hoff. God bless you so much.
Well, thank you, Tanya. It's been an honor to be on your Empower Hour. So thank you.
Okay. Super. Thank you. All right. Well, isn't that amazing? I just am so glad to have had Dr. Hoff on and to give the history of his story, where he's at right now. They're going to be lining up another court date. You can believe it. He's going to get into court one day. And so we'll keep you notified. And when that time happens, we'll have to have Dr. Hoff back on the show so that he can fill us in the date and that we can attend that. And you know, another really important thing is that when we have these court dates, if you happen to be in the area, show up because the judges need to see this presence. There should be 1,000 people outside the courtroom because it's so full and because that sends a clear message. Okay, so next week's guest is going to be our very own Prepper Dan Vachon. He wears several hats. He's also a chapter leader, provincial leader in the Maritimes. He's also our pastoral lead, but he's also Prepper Dan Vachon. And we're going to have a little bit of a lighter week next week. And we're going to talk about gardening, getting your hands dirty and your heart light. Isn't that something about gardening? It's just a beautiful thing. Okay, so on to our Bible verses. The first one is from Matthew 17:20. It says, "Because you have so little faith, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." And I mean, that is such a special thing to believe so fully that God has control of all things right now, and that evil is, it has a time on earth, but where's your heart? Where's your focus? Because God is more than ready and willing to take care of you. But when you understand that God is in control of all things, you'll understand as well that Canada turned their back on God, and he's giving us time for a God reset. He's saying, you know what? You need to get on your knees. You need to do some repenting because you turned your back. You made your God money, or you made your God sex, or you made your God alcohol, whatever it is, or you made your God your work instead of having a place for God in your life. And he's saying, with me, you can do all things. And I used to, I pray all the time for heavenly kind of wisdom, knowledge, patience, understanding, and discernment. And I'd always add, and give me the faith that could move a mustard seed. So for so many years, I saw all the tyrannical things that were happening in Canada, especially under the rule of Justin Trudeau. I saw the mass immigration. I saw the harms of multiculturalism just breaking down the core of our nation, which is founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And no other country other than Western nations based on these principles had freedom and democracy. And I always challenge you, think of the 56 Islamic majority countries, North Korea, Pakistan, China. These people live under oppression. All right. So it's not a matter that you have to be a Christian to live in Canada, but boy, oh boy, it would sure be a good idea if you appreciate these principles because they're life-saving, life-giving, freedom-giving principles. All right, so the final verse is from Romans 8:37-39. It says, "No, despite all these things, overwhelming victory is ours through Christ who loved us. And I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love, neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither our fears for today nor our worries about tomorrow. Not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. No power in the sky above or in the earth below. Indeed, nothing in all creation will ever be able to separate us from the love of God that is revealed in Christ Jesus our Lord." So I hope that that really resonates in your heart. I mean, they can take my body, but guess what? They can't touch my soul. and my soul belongs to Jesus, and I hope yours does too. Okay, so just thank you for joining us tonight. Remember to share this with at least 5 people and subscribe to our Empower Hour and make sure that you join us next week with Dan Fishon. So thank you so much. God bless you and God bless Canada.
Hearts will pursue it. You have a virtuous heart if you are here today pursuing freedom and righteousness. And then verse 23 comes along with a promise. God says he will turn the sins of evil people back on them. He will destroy them for their sins. I take great comfort in that because I serve because we as a nation have turned our backs on him and we need to get right. So I am just going to thank you so much. I'm going to say God bless you.